Okay, so today's the second day of the month of Av. Yesterday was Rosh Chodesh. One of the few times in the Torah that it actually tells us the actual date of someone's passing was yesterday. Moshe's brother, Aaron, passed away yesterday. And the Torah actually tells us the date, which is very unusual. So yesterday was Aaron HaKohen's Yahrzeit. But either way, so we, why is this not working? Okay. Sorry here. Okay, yeah. So now, we're in the month of Av. The Talmud tells us that when the month of Av comes in, Mishenichmas Av nematim besimcha. We're supposed to reduce our joy. And so from here until the 9th of Av, we are in a state of mourning, avelut. And each holiday has a mitzvah, or at least one, if not multiple mitzvot. When it comes to Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, the mitzvah of the day is avelut. And when we look at the laws of avelut, fortunately, if you've gone through it, you know that there are different levels, there are different modes, there are different time periods within avelut. So, for example, God forbid, when your loved one passes away, that's called aninut. That's the first stage. You're getting ready for the burial. So the Torah says you can't do any mitzvot. You have to focus on getting ready for that, getting ready to bury the deceased. And then it goes to the 7 days, Shiva, and then goes to Shloshim 30, and then it goes to Yud Beis Chodesh for a parent, right? So parents, you have a full year of mourning. And in each stage, there's a different mode of how we operate. And so when it comes to this holiday of Tisha B'Av, actually leading up to the holiday, it's almost a reverse of what I just described. So instead of going from the most intense and then it getting less, we actually operate it's the inverse. So we go from less and we build up to more and more, so that, let's say, the 17th of Tammuz is the beginning of a period of Avelut, which would be similar to the 12 months, Yud Beis Chodesh. Then when we get to the Rosh Chodesh Av, kind of move into like a Shloshim type of period. Shavuot Shechalbo, the week that Tisha B'Av actually comes out, becomes Shiva. And then Tisha B'Av itself is Anina. It's like Mes Mutal Lefanecha. It's like the dead body of your relative is sitting in front of you. So the idea is we're going from a less intense to a more and more intense type of experience. And what we're going towards is we're going to be in this avelut stage for the destruction of the temple and for all the other horrible things that happened on Tisha B'Av. So the mitzvah, right? So we have a mitzvah of avelut, of mourning. And so the question is, so we understand when we lose a relative, someone that we loved and is part of who we are, our identity, it's easy to understand the idea of avelut. Like it's almost like a natural thing. Like you need to tell me how to do this. But in a sense, the Torah and the way that our religion works is, yes, we have a prescription of how it is that we operate. We have guidelines. We have a way that we're supposed to act. And it helps us in terms of how we process our loss. So when it comes to this period of the year, we're taking those same exact laws and we're applying it to this period of time. So we lost the temple and we are mourning the loss of the temple and we build up to that. So we go from this, this process of like the breach of the walls, the breaking of the tablets, and we move towards this very, very intense, it's supposed to be a very intense experience of Tisha B'Av. Now, the mitzvah is avelut. And the question is then, what does that mean? How does that translate? Like, how do we understand the mitzvah of the day? So I'm going to throw this out there as a question. When you know, especially if someone's gone through and has an experience of having gone through mourning of a close relative. So avelut, what is it about avelut, about this? What would you say is the end game, or what comes out of this process of avelut? Anybody want to give me some ideas?
Well, it's again, it's I think it's different depending on who the person is, but it's most certainly closure. You know, when you lose somebody, you need closure.
Okay.
There's also a lot of pain associated with it, right? Depending on how it happened, whether it was just sudden or whether it was a long-term thing, there's a lot of internal pain and a lot of things you have to deal with and changes because that has happened. So if you lose a loved one, your life is totally changed. Mm-hmm. You lost a Beit HaMikdash, the life of the Jews totally changed. So you need that time to acclimate to all that change.
Okay.
And that's how I...
Okay, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm here. Yep.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting. The process, and as Lawrence's point, yes, it depends on who it is, but if it's, typically, if you haven't just gotten through it, it's a period of pain, but it's also a period of celebration of that person.
Okay.
And pursuing a different frame of mind over that period of time, which... Yeah, you know, 7 days, and then obviously beyond 7 days and 30 days, etc. So it's a bit of celebration after the initial painful part of the process.
Okay, so but go back to the beginning though. Like when you're, and Mark, I'll let you talk in a second. But at the initial stage, that when you're, and again, we're really focused on, let's say, this close relative to the parent. Let's say your parent. You lost a parent, God forbid, right? So in that type of situation, at the time of, I'm not talking as the year progresses, but at that initial stage, it's extremely painful, right? And you're sitting there and you're processing, okay? So it's you're going through that, but there's a mitzvah of avelut. So let's say, Mark, what do you want to say?
Well, I was going to say it's a process of healing of the loss. But it's also an internal reassessment of how that person impacted you, and you know how you move forward without that loved one.
Okay, so that's interesting what you just said. So you're saying that there's something that you're like, as you're going through this process, there's an internal say, what was the word again? An internal,
like an assessment or reassessment or evaluation.
Perfect. Okay. So if you were to say, like, if I were to, like, try to define the mitzvah, right? Because there's a mitzvah of avelut, right? Is we're supposed to really sit there. Obviously, we're broken over a part of us is, like, died, right? So we have to, like, therefore, we're forced to look at life differently. It changes our perspective on life, right? I mean, it changes how we look at things, right? So it's interesting. In the Hebrew word, avelut, is the shoresh, the root of it is aval, which is like however. You know, I thought it was this, aval, however, now I see it this way. Or I've been forced to see it in a different way. So at its root, avelut is this idea of we're forced to reassess and look at things in a different way, okay? So now, and it's almost like we're forced to see the truth. What's amazing is that you have a person who lived their entire life, and the truth is until a person passes away, their life is still really unfolding. It's not that they've actually finalized anything until that last breath. And at that point, we can say, okay, this is, like, we understand, this is what this person's life was. Now it's a complete work. But So that definitely, but in terms of like what it brings us to is to see the truth of, about things. Like we can actually see the things for what they really are. Okay, so now with that in mind, I want to look at this. There's a famous Gemara in Gittin that everybody and their brother will pull out when it comes to Tisha B'Av. It's like one of the things that we study on Tisha B'Av. And when you would stop someone on the street and you would ask them, okay, so why was the second temple destroyed? And they'll tell us the classic answer is because of sinas chinam, baseless hatred, okay? So then they pull out this Gemara in Gittin. It's in Gittin 55b. And then they'll tell us, and here's the story of, this is the illustration of sinat chinam, baseless hatred. Now, the truth is that, unfortunately, it's not accurate how they understand the Gemara. The Gemara is being misread because they take it out of context. And the truth is, in life, and I think in general, this is a major issue of things being not in context. And so here's the Gemara in context. We're going to learn it together. And actually, I was thinking about it. I want to focus on the stories that people don't like to focus on in this Gemara. And then, but it sheds light on the story that everybody does focus on. And then we have to come to understand what is sinas chinam and what's the issue there, because that is the word. The word is sinat chinam, hatred, that's chinam. We have to understand what that chinam means. It's been translated as baseless. But let's come to our own conclusion by stripping out any preconceived notions that we have. Let's just look at the Gemara. Let's study a Talmudic piece together. We probably have read it together in the past. I've looked at this piece before. It's not the first time. Let's study it together. And then, again, bringing it back to how we learned and understood what it means when we talk about the mitzvah of the day of is avelut, that Tisha B'Av, we're coming towards. Now, we're starting. We're in this process. So just on the halachic, on the halachic level, we come from the Rosh Chodesh of Av, and now we're making our way toward Tisha B'Av. So this week we don't eat meat, we don't drink wine, because that's things that we don't do during our when we're in Avelut. We don't take haircuts, we don't shave. Now there's leniencies on the shaving part you can get if you need to, like the haircutting. We don't. We don't wear freshly laundered clothing. Like we're in Avelut. Those are the laws of Avelut within this period of time. So now, here we go. The Gemara says like this. Rabbi Yochanan said, "What's the meaning of that which is written? Happy is the man who fears always, but he who hardens his heart shall fall into mischief." Okay, so it's a verse from Proverbs, which was written by King Solomon. And again, happy is the man who fears always, but he who hardens his heart shall fall into mischief. Okay, let's just understand. Now, Proverbs, Mishle, is like the most intense, brilliant book that's out there that most people don't study because it's just so hard, because it's packed with like wisdom. Okay, so, you know, we're more readily involved in the Psalms that were written by King David, but King Solomon, who wrote Mishlei, Proverbs, it's one of these books that's very hard. It's difficult. There's just a lot of ideas, and so let's try to understand this pasuk, this verse, before we even go into what the Gemara is going to say. So Rav Yochanan starts out this teaching by saying, "Happy is the man who fears always, but he who hardens his heart shall fall into mischief." So what does that mean? Okay, go, Mark.
Right, well, I don't know if the translation of the word fear is actually, you know, precise.
Okay.
But we've had this discussion before, that fear is really more about awe or respect of the relationship of God and of the relationship that we have with God, and having sort of... and I guess someone who doesn't, you know, maintain that respect or that awe of God and his power will, you know, sort of, that's almost like self-idol worship. You feel that you could do whatever you want to do.
Okay. But let's focus on the last part, because there are two things. It says, Ashrei Adam Mefakhei Tamid. So fortunate is the man, or happy is the man, who is Mefakhei Tamid, who's always afraid, or whatever that means. Umaksha Libo, who hardens his heart, but he who hardens his heart shall fall into mischief, shall fall into ra'ah, into bad things. Okay? So, Maksha Libo Yipol Bera'ah. So, what do you think that means? Maksha Libo, hardens his heart.
Well, I think it's kind of, it's all put together. I don't think you can separate one from the other.
Okay.
If you harden your heart, or if you're not open to whether it's empathy or other people, or you know, if when you harden your heart, you're closing off things, or you're not feeling other things, or you're not taking in other things. So if you're just living unto yourself and everything's just internal to you, you're gonna come to bad things.
Right. So if you're not, what's interesting is we automatically, like, you jump to the fact that it's heart, right? Is your emotion, right? But it also could be, also your mind. Meaning, even though it doesn't say your rosh, it's maksha libo. But if I have a hardened heart, I'm not even willing to. I'm not willing to, like, be open minded. You would say, right? Right. So even though it's true, it's talking. It's maksha libo, heart. But it's also possible that you could understand this as, I'm closed minded, right? So again, if I were to read it that way, so just to throw it in, so fortunate is the man who is always concerned. I'm not going to the fear like in terms of awe here, but I'm going to say simple. Like if a guy is mefached, he's afraid or he's concerned or he's like worried. So fortunate is the person who's worried all the time. In a way, like, you know, I'm concerned, etc. But if I close my mind and I harden my heart, then I'll fall into a bad place. Meaning, almost like, if I were to summarize this, what would I say? Hugh, you want to say something?
Yeah, I'd say that it also could have related to your ego too. Meaning that, like, you have to have a sense of humility to, there's something bigger than you outside of you.
Okay.
You have to be open to that.
Interesting. Okay.
If you can't, then it's going to lead to you can't learn or grow. Because you think you know everything, or you feel like you have all the answers already, that can lead to a lack of growth.
Great, excellent. So that's okay. So right. So now, Yochanan basically is telling us that I'm going to teach you a lesson. Okay, I'm teaching you a lesson, and the premise of this lesson is fortunate is the one who's always afraid. Meaning, like, it's comparing these two things. So it's saying that what does it mean to always be afraid? It's the guy who's got his mind open. Meaning, the guy who closes his mind, maksha libo, closes his heart, he's going to fall into mischief, or he's going to fall into harm's way, or into bad places. So what's the flip side of that? Is I should have an open mind. Meaning, ashrei adam mefakhei tamid. The guy who's mefakhei tamid is the guy who's, what is he worried about? It's not that he's of awe in a sense, but rather, because I'm comparing it to the second part of the sentence, is that fortune is the guy who's got an open mind, right? Who's going to be mefachi tamid is, I'm always worried. What am I worried about? I'm always going to be open to, like, see what's really going on. Because if I don't, the flip side is, then I'll harden my heart, I'll have a closed mind, and then I'm going to fall into a bad place, okay? That's the header, okay? That's his intro to the famous story, which is Jerusalem was destroyed on account of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. The place known as the King's Mountain was destroyed on account of a rooster and a hen. The city of Beitar was destroyed on account of a shaft from a chariot. Okay? So the famous story, so I guess we're going to do the famous story, which everybody learns. And that is the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, right? The Gemara explained Jerusalem's destroyed on account of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. This says there was a certain man whose friend was named Kamsa and whose enemy was named Bar Kamsa. He once made a large feast and said to his servant, go bring me my friend Kamsa. The servant went and mistakenly brought him his enemy Bar Kamsa. The man who was hosting the feast came and found Bar Kamsa sitting at his feast. The host said to Bar Kamsa, "That man is the enemy of that man. That is, you are my enemy. What then do you want? What are you doing here? So arise and leave." Bar Kamsa said to him, "Since I've already come, let me stay."
Am I the only one who lost Jonathan?
I'm sorry?
No. No.
I lost him.
I lost him as well.
Uh-oh. You can't hear me? Ooh.
Now
we
can. Now
we
can.
Now we can. We lost you there. We lost you from where they brought in the wrong guy.
Okay, hold on. Let me see. I'm just looking at my... Let me see my internet here. Okay.
You're good. Keep going.
I'm back. Okay, let me flip it over to a different channel. Let's see if it's better. Am I moving? Okay, is that better? Am I back on?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good. Okay, you're so good. Far. So where'd I get knocked off?
Start from the beginning. You pretty much got lost off after the first sentence.
Okay, the man was hosting a feast. So basically, I'll do the summary here.
He brought the wrong guy.
He brought the wrong guy. They invited the wrong guy, and then he confronts the wrong guy, his enemy. Says to him, "What are you doing here?" So Bar Kamsa said to him, "Since I've already come, let me stay, and I'll give you money for whatever I eat and drink. Just do not embarrass me by sending me out." The host said to him, "No, you must leave." Bar Kamsa said to him, "I will give you money for half the feast. Just don't send me away." The host said to him, "No, you must leave." Bar Kamsa then said to him, "I'll give you the money for the entire feast. Just let me stay." The host said to him, "No, you must leave." Finally, the host took Bar Kamsa by his hand, stood him up, and took him out. After having been cast out from the feast, Bar Kamsa said to himself, "Since the sages were sitting there and did not protest the actions of the host, although they saw how he humiliated me, learn from it that they were content with what he did. I will therefore go and inform against them to the king." He went and said to the emperor, "The Jews have rebelled against you." The emperor said to him, "Who says that this is the case?" Bar Kamsa said to him, "Go and test them. Send them an offering to be brought in honor of the government and see whether they will sacrifice it." So now, at this point in the story, this is where everybody says, okay, you know what the story is? It's baseless hatred. The fact that these guys, this guy embarrassed Bar Kamsa and the rabbi sat there idly by and didn't protest, that's the baseless hatred. And that's what this whole story is about. And so that's taken out of context. Why? Because we started with a header. Rav Yochanan told us that, again, the most important thing is that a person should always be in a place where they're open-minded. And a person who closes their mind to looking at things for what they are, that's when you get into trouble. That's Rav Yochanan's teaching. So how does that apply to this? How do I apply it to this story of Bar Kamsa? So the answer is, it's not done yet. We're still in the middle of the story. What happens next? The emperor went and sent with him a choice 3-year-old calf. While Bar Kamsa was coming with the calf to the temple, he made a blemish on the calf's upper lip. And some say he made a blemish on its eyelid, a place where according to us, meaning the halacha, it's a blemish, but according to the outside world, Gentile rules for their offerings, it is not a blemish. Therefore, when Bar Kamsa brought the animal to the temple, the priests would not sacrifice it on the altar since it was blemished, but they also could not explain this satisfactorily to the Gentile authorities who did not consider it to be blemished. The blemish notwithstanding, the sages thought to sacrifice the animal as an offering due to the imperative to maintain peace with the government.
Lost them again.
Again?
Jonathan, I don't know if you can hear us, but we lost you.
Okay, I wonder what's going on here with the internet. Can you hear me now? No. Okay, can you hear me now?
Jonathan, we lost you.
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to log in from somewhere else.
You got to the point where they wouldn't understand that it was blemished.
Okay.
Because it wasn't a blemish to them, and about 2 paragraphs up.
Okay, give me. I'm gonna log in from. Hold on a second. Let me find it here. Okay.